I'm Marco Werman. This is The World.
I read the news today, oh boy.
50 years ago, this song by the Beatles prompted this letter from a BBC official to the head of the band's record label.
Dear Sir Joseph, I never thought the day would come when we would have to put a ban on an EMI record. But sadly, that is what has happened over this track. We have listened to it over and over again with great care, and we cannot avoid coming to the conclusion that the words, "I'd love to turn you on," followed by that mounting montage of sound, could have a rather sinister meaning.
The Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band turns 50 this week. The album turned a lot of people on, musically and in so many other ways too. But perhaps the most radical turn-on came with the album's comfortable navigation around mind-altering substances, marijuana and LSD specifically. Simon Warner is the author of Text, Drugs, and Rock and Roll.
Around 66, 67, as they were making this album, they were really all powerful. They were omnipotent in the world of popular music making. And I think in a climate when mores and attitudes to drugs were changing.
Well, do you think you have now encouraged your fans to take drugs?
I don't think it'll make any difference. You know, I don't think my fans are going to take drugs just because I did, you know.
The Beatles wanted to be standard bearers for this new countercultural position. I think it's as simple as that. They wanted to spread an ideology that they actually believed in.
So you write about the story that may or may not be true of how the Beatles were first introduced to marijuana specifically. It kind of suggests how pervasive marijuana at least had become by 1967. Can you just share that kind of chain of custody of who smoked when and what?
Yes, there is a story that in 1940, the jazz saxophonist Lester Young met a young would-be writer called Jack Kerouac in a New York bar, and he was the first to turn Kerouac onto this drug. In the 1950s, Kerouac met an up-and-coming journalist called Al Aronovitz, who worked for the New York Daily Post. Aronovitz was very interested in subcultural scenes in the city, and I think he'd searched Kerouac out, but indeed Kerouac turned him onto the cigarettes. At the very start of the 1960s, Aronovitz, who was now something of a figure on the scene, encountered a fresh-faced boy from the Midwest called Bob Dylan, who just turned up in the village, and he gave Dylan his first experience of the drug. And then extraordinarily, in 1964, when Aronovitz got Dylan and the Beatles together in a rather posh hotel called Hotel Delmonico in Manhattan, the Beatles then had their first experience.
He didn't actually give us it. He was in the room.
He was not the supplier?
No. Bob Dylan's your dealer.
So there was this very interesting chain of connections from the 1940s, jazzmen, all the way through to these British invaders, the Beatles, in 1964.
And the Hotel Delmonico today is?
It now carries the name Trump Park Avenue. Can you believe it? So the president actually owns that particular space.
Yeah, the circuit is completed in some surreal way. So if you are a narc and looking for them, what other drug references can you find on Sgt. Pepper?
Well, there are quite a few, Marco. Let's start with perhaps an obvious one in Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. It's quite easy to turn that title into the acronym LSD.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
John Lennon, extraordinarily, who'd been taking LSD for a year or two, he denied any connection between the title of that song and the actual drug.
Has it ever been settled whether Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was a code for anything?
It never was, and nobody believes me. This is the truth. My son came home with a drawing and showed me this strange-looking woman flying around. I said, "What is it?" He said, "It's Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds." And I thought, that's beautiful. I immediately wrote a song about it.
But I think it's quite implausible, because if you listen to the song, this is really the description of a psychedelic trip.
I mean, the Beatles disavowed a lot of these drug references in their music, not just on Sgt. Pepper, right?
Yes, they did. Fixing a Hole is sometimes thought to be a junky needle reference. This was also denied. And the more sort of metaphorical, with a little help from my friends, this was thought to be a possible reference to drug use.
Try with a little help from my friend.
It's also worth saying that at a time when commentators were really looking for these connections, you know, they would search them out. And if we're thinking about a day in the life, phrases like "I'd love to turn you on" are plainly the language of the day. They are linked to people saying, "Can I get you high?" There is this central section where Paul McCartney joins the fun and talks about going upstairs, having a smoke. Somebody spoke, went into a dream. And there's a clear connection, at least on the face of it, between, you know, smoking a cigarette that wasn't just tobacco and having some sort of trippy experience.
Yeah, it is really hard to avoid all those connections. Just place this album and its drug references in the context of the moment, because this was 1967, the Summer of Love, right?
The Summer of Love. I mean, this was a time when there was a sort of belief that maybe these intriguing psychedelic substances could make the world a better place, could make people more connected with the world that they were in. I mean, you know, the early 1960s, we saw important figures like Timothy Leary, who was a Harvard psychology professor, stand up and say LSD could be the way for people to lead better lives, see the world in a different way. And certainly by around 1965, LSD was spreading into the sort of elite celebrity circles. Certainly the Beatles were taking LSD by the mid-60s. And in the USA, this drug was only made illegal in 1966. Mm. So it's still regarded as a sort of suitable recreational narcotic if you wanted to take it.
Simon, you write that Sgt. Pepper was the first time that the Beatles published their song lyrics on the back cover of the album. How do you think focusing on lyrics and words like this gave power to the words like never before?
This was a big step forward. I think until the Beatles did what they did, there was an assumption that pop song lyrics, certainly those of the rock and roll era, the late 50s, early 60s, were just inconsequential, moon in June, boy meets girl words. Mm. The Beatles clearly wrote a body of lyrics here that had much more depth and reflection, and these were much deeper, sometimes darker themed. I think we can say that because individuals like Bob Dylan and the Beatles were friends with figures like Allen Ginsberg, the great promoter of beat poetry, his own poetry, I think they were influenced by that kind of element. Ginsberg sort of sought the power that rock stardom could bring to him. But figures like Dylan and the Beatles also wanted to bring literary credibility to the kind of work they were doing. They wanted to escape the showbiz manacles. And the Beatles, by doing this kind of thing, started to do that.
Simon Warner, author of Text, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, thanks very much.
Thank you, Marco.
Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. This is a take one.
Take one from the new Outtakes box set of Sgt. Pepper's, the 50th anniversary edition. Pretty interesting stuff if you're into the artist sketchbook and process, which I am. You're listening to The World.